Hello.
Good morning.
And good night.
Oh. Where do you guys listen to this podcast? I'll put a Q&A along with the podcast so you can answer. But like, where are you listening to this? I'm curious.
That's a really good question. Yeah, what are your lives like? And how do we fit into that?
Why am I the most important person in your life? Let me know in the comments. And not Hannah, me.
But if I'm the most important person in your life, really make it known, because I could use the moral support right now. Thank you.
I had COVID recently and I am so mucusy. Like, just, it just will not leave my body. Like, I feel better completely, but it's just...
She's full of phlegm.
Every time we're about to start recording, I'm like horking up mucus.
It's awesome. And if you guys are lucky, maybe we'll leave a clip of it in just so you can get that ambiance in the background.
ASMR. So I started watching Twin Peaks for the first time recently. Hannah's decided to watch it with me.
Because I did the thing that I always do, which is I watch some of a show. And so I've seen the first season of Twin Peaks twice now and not the second.
Yeah, I don't know what happens. I don't know who killed Laura Palmer. Don't tell me.
Me neither. So don't tell me.
It's a funny show. I wasn't expecting it to be like that. I didn't realize that it was so soapy. Or, like, so referential of the soap.
Well, I think also Maya just did a video on melodramas, so we were just researching those and thinking about those a lot. And then when you watch Twin Peaks, you're like, ah, I see.
Everyone on it is the hottest person I've ever seen.
It's insane.
Like, it's kind of crazy, yeah. So that makes it fun to watch. And then also, Kyle MacLachlan, that character is just fascinating. It's, like, the strangest characterization.
Do you ever see Kyle MacLachlan's social media behavior?
Yeah, I saw his Lord post recently.
It's so funny and
weird.
Put
his dogs in it, too.
But even his TikTok is so, like, quirky and weird.
Like, he's a weird guy.
I know.
I mean, for David Lynch, for him to be David Lynch's muse, like, I feel like he'd have to be a little bit of a freak.
But, you know, when someone's weird on the internet and I don't know them in person, I always want to know what kind of weird they are. Like, how knowing is all of their choices?
His career is so awesome. Like, yeah. To be in both Showgirls and Sex and the City in such a short turnaround is, like, the funniest thing. And he's so good in Sex and the City.
And he's the mayor on Portlandia.
Shouts out to Kyle MacLachlan. David Lynch's horror is the scariest type of horror to me. Like, I can't watch his movies because it's, like, the exact thing that disturbs me.
And what is that?
Kind of supernatural, and just, I'm very scared of things I don't understand. The thing that's the scariest to me about The Shining is just that it has these, like, really long shots that are so long that it makes you uncomfortable by the end. Like, it doesn't even have to be of something scary. It's just that there's, like, this thing within The Shining. Like, the terror in The Shining is something so unknown. Like, you never see it. It's just, like, they're kind of corrupting everyone. Mm-hmm. And the same as in Twin Peaks. Just, like, the dream sequences and stuff are so strange in a way that makes me feel like I'm tripping. And that really freaks me out.
Oh, interesting. It's almost like a sensory kind of thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it needs to kind of create an overall feeling of something is amiss.
I don't know if I've talked about this before, but in this Tartovsky film, Stalker, there's, like, this scene where the wife is yelling at the main character, and then she kind of, like, she's, like, on the ground, like, writhing. And the shot is so long and it's, like, slowly zooming in on her and it's just her writhing around on the ground, like, angry. And for some reason I found it so scary. Like, I was like, I'm just freaked out. I don't know why this woman's writhing around like that. And I don't know what it was, but it was terrifying to me.
I wish I found that stuff more disturbing.
I mean, why would you wish that?
I don't know, because I feel weird not. I don't know.
I don't think that's weird. I don't think it's weird to not be scared of something. You feel left out.
Yeah.
Sorry, I should have blown my nose.
Oh, and there you go, you guys. You got it.
It's just coming out of every orifice.
Yum. Speaking of orifices.
Speaking of orifices, time to talk about the orifice of the internet and what comes out of it. So, I'm Maya.
I'm Hannah.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting.
Mm-hmm.
This season is a loose, no pun intended, history of sex on the internet, the symbiosis of our two most basic instincts, innovation and getting off. If you like our show and you want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have bonus episodes, weekly minisodes, and early access to our regular programming. And if you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps us out a lot. In 1949, not yet famous and very broke, Marilyn Monroe posed naked for a pinup photographer named Tom Kelly. She made $50 off the shoot, and she used it to make a car payment, and then she went about her merry way. Tom went on to sell the photos to the Western Lithograph Company for $900, and they were printed in a pinup calendar the next year. But neither Tom nor Marilyn at the time knew that she'd become an overnight sensation very soon after. And in 1953, at the height of her career, famous pervert Hugh Hefner bought the photos for only $500 and released them in the first ever issue of Playboy, much to Marilyn's surprise. Marilyn never saw any of the money made from this hugely popular issue, and she actually had to buy the magazine just to be able to see herself in it. She later kind of reclaimed being in it and was like, yes, I did this, but she didn't see any profit. About 30 years later, in the very early 1980s, a woman named La Juan and her partner Billy Wood took nude photos of each other camping on a trip. The printed versions of these photos were later stolen from their house and submitted for a $50 cash fee to Beaver Hunt, which was a popular section in Hustler magazine where basically amateur models and everyday women could submit nude photos of themselves for publication. There was no real great verification procedure for submissions, other than basically Hustler would call the number in the consent form that had been submitted and basically asked whoever answered the phone some like general questions about themselves, which meant that a lot of the photos that ended up in print were actually submitted by like angry ex-boyfriends or broke criminals like this guy. So the robber passed the test pretty easily. He got his girlfriend to answer the questions, and Lawan's nude image appeared in the issue, along with her age, her address, and a line about how she has this fantasy about, quote, getting tied down and screwed by two bikers.
God.
Yeah, kind of insane. So LaJuan suffered a lot of anguish and humiliation, reasonably, after discovering herself in the magazine. And she also started getting, like, a ton of creepy phone calls from people because her number was in it. And so she ended up suing Hustler for infringing her privacy and was awarded $150,000 in compensatory damages. Basically, what you need to know from these two stories I have just told you is that since the invention of the camera, practically, men have been profiting off of images of women's bodies without their consent. What you also need to know is that these stories are early versions of what we now call revenge porn. Hannah, what is revenge porn as you understand it?
My understanding of revenge porn is usually a man, like an ex-boyfriend or something, or someone who feels slighted by the victim, but has access to, you know, nude photographs or personal tapes, goes ahead and releases it in some capacity as a form of revenge.
Yeah, it's like if Tommy Lee had sent the sex tape to the press himself, basically.
Yeah, to be like, fuck you.
Yeah, that is kind of like the general societal understanding of it, and it's in the title, right? Like revenge porn, like you're getting back at someone.
Yeah.
With this image. Yeah, so revenge porn is formally defined as the distribution of sexually graphic images of individuals without their consent. So this includes images originally obtained without consent, so like hidden recordings or recordings of sexual assaults. So think about like those football player videos that were circulating around campuses, as well as images originally obtained with consent, usually within the context of like a private or confidential relationship, like you're saying. So images, you know, consensually given to an intimate partner who then later distributes them without consent. And as we'll get into it in this episode, the problem of non-consensual image sharing increased tenfold with the invention of the internet.
I'm shocked.
Shocker. And also social media. So the study from 2016 found that out of 3,000 Americans over the age of 15 who use the internet, 3% of those people have been threatened with revenge porn and 2% have been the victims of it. And it also found that this was a gendered issue, with 1 in 10 women under 20 having been threatened with revenge porn. And most interestingly, people who identified as gay, lesbian, or bisexual had a greater chance of being exposed online.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I found that really interesting. I don't know. Do you have any guesses?
I guess, I mean, that's also a broad category of people, so I feel like I don't know what the specificities would be.
I know. I think, you know, stats should always be taken with a grain of salt. Like, I try to avoid kind of listing off statistics because, of course, this is like a specific study of, you know, they probably tried to get as general a population as possible, but it's still just 3,000 people, so.
Yeah.
It's hard to know, but, like, what we can see from it is that revenge porn was a big topic of interest in the 2010s. And seemed to be, at least out of these respondents, like, a very prevalent issue. Obviously, revenge porn can significantly harm someone's reputation and, like, disrupt employment and education opportunities. There's a lot of research also that shows that the impacts of revenge porn actually mimic the impacts of sexual assault. One of the books that I was reading features this interview with a psychotherapist who says that victims can experience shame, self-blame, disturbances in sleeping and eating, fear of being in public places, and she says that to her, revenge porn is sexual assault, which is going to be kind of a recurring theme in this episode. Mm-hmm. So basically what we've gotten from these definitions is that revenge porn is a sharing of images without consent, essentially from someone who took a recording of you or who received a photo of you in confidence. But in this episode, we'll be looking at a guy who changed that definition altogether.
Okay.
Saddle up. Buckle down.
Aye, Captain.
So, basically, ever since the start of social networking sites, women's images have been used without their consent. We talked in, like, the Pam and Tommy episode about how their sex tape basically
that kicked, is revenge porn.
It basically kicked off this concept of women's bodies aren't protected. Before Facebook, there was FaceMash, a website that Mark Zuckerberg created when he was at Harvard, which hacked school servers.
Because he's such an awesome guy.
Basically, it downloaded pictures of female students and then put them up next to each other so people could rank them based on their looks. Then upping the ante, there was this website that came up in 2005 called Ex-Girlfriend Pictures, where people could submit nude photos of their former girlfriends or wives. And this one was a biggie because where Mark Zuckerberg was penalized for FaceMash, like that he got in trouble for it, this website was protected under the Communications Decency Act, which is basically the law that protected website owners from being liable for the content that was on their site. So it's like Twitter yes. not being held liable for something illegal being posted to the site.
This is going to come up in later episodes.
Oh, yes. Very important. So if the creator of Ex-Girlfriend Pictures didn't actually take the photos or submit them himself, then he had immunity.
Right.
This is going to become very important. I'm really curious. Just like a preliminary thought, like what is it do you think about like the lawlessness of the internet that makes it such a hotbed for trespassing on women's privacy and just people's privacy in general, but like women's bodies?
Because I think if there weren't already established laws in the real world, there'd be a lot more trespassing on women's bodies and privacy in the real world. But there is something about the internet that allows you, I mean, one, when there aren't regulations in place to protect those women, then you would go buck wild. And then also it's like you get to do it anonymously. You get to access those images more easily. If you were somebody who was inclined to like not think that women were deserving of respect or dignity or boundaries, then a pre-legislated internet would be a great free-for-all for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the fucking Wild West, basically.
Yeah.
As we've said in these other episodes, like women's bodies are already kind of subject to voyeurism. But then, yeah, as you said, when it's done anonymously, it's like so much easier to be voyeuristic, right? On the internet, like you have no face.
Did you know that the image that ended up being used to kind of help develop the technology behind the JPEG was taken from an issue of Playboy?
No.
It was like a model. They cut out her boobs, like it was just her face, but it's like that was the one that they decided to use through all these different labs or whatever developing it. It became the standard image for perfecting the JPEG.
Whoa, that's yeah. like J-Lo and Google Images kind of.
I mean, exactly.
Wow. The power of women.
I guess, or men's horniness.
Or men's libidos, yeah. Yeah, this study from 2020 called Revenge Porn in the Shadow of the First Amendment had this really interesting take as well, where they say, the dissemination of videos and images on various virtual platforms has made it difficult to identify the disseminators due to the anonymity of the process and the ease of subsequent redistribution by secondary disseminators. So, like, it can just pollinate all over. I also think any, obviously, increase in surveillance will end up reinforcing human biases and behaviors, like we see with these surveillance technology being found out to, like, racially profile people, for example. I think it also has, like, a gendered element to it as well.
Of course.
So, it's 2010. Let me paint the picture for you.
2010.
There's this guy named Hunter Moore. He's this brown-haired, tatted, white hipster guy from Sacramento. He's, like, 21, and he parties a lot. He actually runs this party promotion company, and he makes a website for it called Is Anyone Up, which he uses to post event flyers on. And one day, Hunter's essentially video chatting with his friends on AOL, and he wants to show them pictures of this hot girl that he's been hooking up with. In his words, some other guy's girlfriend. And I guess I have to let you know right now that Hunter is a fucking dickhead. Like,
all you had to say was he's a guy in his 20s partying, whatever.
He runs a party promotion site.
Yeah, I could put two and two together.
Yeah, he's like a Gavin McInnes-style hipster, misogynist, egomaniac. He's an asshole, and we're going to see more of that come through as we go along. But yeah, so he realizes when he's trying to share this image that the image sharing feature on AOL is super glitchy. And so he decides instead to post the photo on Is Anyone Up so his friends can see it. Slowly, over time, his friends also start posting pictures of girls that they're seeing or hooking up with on Is Anyone Up. And then, in his words, it's like a slow burn where strangers start to get involved too. And it starts to accumulate more and more lewd photos and basically turns into this system where Hunter encourages people to submit nude images, most of which are not pictures of the submitter themselves, like Beaver Hunt was supposed to be, but in the tradition of ex-girlfriend pictures, usually a former lover. Majority of these pictures are of women, shocker, and oddly, many of them are of teachers.
I'm sorry, like just coincidentally?
No, I would say not by coincidence, which I think we'll start to get why.
Okay.
But the photos submitted, basically they have to be uploads from a digital camera where the date is on the photo. And so every photo on the site has the date, it's accompanied by the victim's full name, social media profile, and either the city they live in or their address.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So just straight up doxing.
It's like Beaver Hunt, but with the malicious intent.
Yeah.
Then it gets posted to a bodybuilding forum where Hunter says that it goes from 0 to 1 million overnight. And at first he wonders for a second if he should take it down, but then the site becomes so popular that people start buying ad spots on it. He says like he was getting pretty mainstream people, like major record labels and stuff, were buying ads on this.
I hate the world.
Yeah. So within a year, the site is allegedly averaging about 300,000 hits a day and is making $20,000 a month in ad revenue.
This website was able to run that popularly for a year.
Oh my God. A website that is just posting nude images of girls without their consent. Of course it's blowing up.
No, I just mean, like, really, it gets this popular, it blows up, and no one is able to step in.
No. So Hunter is basically completely embracing his role in it at this point. In an interview with The Village Voice, he actually says that if someone killed themselves over being posted on it, he says, quote, "Do you know how much money I'd make? At the end of the day, I don't want anyone to hurt themselves. But if they do, thank you for the money." He is a bad guy.
Oh my God. Sorry.
So he's a full-on villain at this point. He's dubbed the most hated man on the internet. He gets like a ton of death threats and cease and desist letters. One woman who like ended up on the site actually like corners him. I think it was like in his front lawn and stabs him in the shoulder.
Good for her.
He laughs it off. And like I said, like Hunter is an egomaniac, right? So he's on talk shows. He's being flown around the world. People are tattooing his face on their thighs.
Amen. Yeah.
And oddly, I don't know, when I was thinking about this kind of egotistical aspect of him, do you think this cult of personality that he's tapping into, do you think it's any different from these other tech giants to a degree?
I think it's a marriage between the like cool guy, Californian ideology, whatever, like Zuckerberg shit. But then it's also, I think, tapping into like a Fight Club kind of like, which we know is sort of related to that, but it taps into this sort of like Tyler Durden, like kind of awesome, sick guy. Like,
amoral, yeah. Anti-establishment kind of fight the man thing, which again very is a big Vice. Aspect of Silicon Valley and very Vice. Also, he's located in San Francisco, so I mean, not too far away.
Yeah.
Pretty close. The ideology bled all around.
Yeah, it's like the worst parts of modern day masculinity had a baby.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, he's just a more extreme version of these guys who are basically using an innovation in tech or like some sort of legal loophole to harvest people's information. Like, it's not that different.
Well, also, like, do you not think that, like, if Mark Zuckerberg had ended up striking gold with this kind of a thing instead of Facebook, he wouldn't have leaned into that? I think it's like you follow where the money is. And in his case, it also kind of gave him a weird type of clout, I suppose, mm-hmm. with like fucking dickheads.
There's also this thing where he draws this like hard moral line with images of underage people being posted. Like, he claims that he hires 5 people to age verify the photos, and like often he'll go on these like rants and interviews that the one thing he hates most in the world is sex offenders. And I just think this is such a funny moral line. Like, he goes on Anderson Cooper's show and is confronted by these 2 women who ended up on his site. And when Anderson grills him about it, he's just kind of like, I don't know, they're whores. Do you think this ties into what we're going to talk about in a later episode, which I won't spoil here, like how sensational arguments about like child trafficking and child porn are kind of used to like eclipse infringements upon women?
I mean, yeah, and, like,
adults.
Well, of course, importantly, we view children as the ultimate victims and like we care so much about that, but then it's like the minute someone turns 18 you can throw them to the wolves. Like, it's so weird to kind of, it's a weird projection. And then in this case, it just kind of feels like he's going, well, at least I'm not a child pornographer. I might be like making money off of exploiting women without their consent, but I could be one step worse and make child porn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, his moral boundaries, they don't seem to inform each other. Like,
no, and I don't really think that this is someone who really cares about the well-being of women or children, I think, you know?
I mean, he's saying he wouldn't really care if someone killed themselves over what he's done, so.
Yeah, as long as she's past her 18th birthday.
If it was a kid, I mean, yeah. It's like, I don't know. So, Is Anyone Up is outrageously popular and thriving. Until James McKibney, who is the owner of this website called Cheaterville.com, where, like, people can post pictures of lovers and partners who cheated on them. I don't know if that reminds you a little bit of TikTok. So James buys the domain for Is Anyone Up, and he takes down all the photos, and then he redirects it to a new domain called bullybill.com, which now, if you look at it, it's basically just James's personal site that lands you on a page. With this open letter he wrote to Hunter, James is, like, this ex-Marine vigilante kind of guy. Like, he's also kind of working against, not against the establishment, but he's kind of doing his own form of justice. Mm-hmm. And the open letter is kind of funny. I like this guy. I think he's kind of funny.
Wait, but the cheater.com is just
weird. Cheater.com's a little sus. Like, it's, you post people who cheated on you, so it also has weird privacy stuff.
Post nudes or just their
No,
names?
No, just people's faces. Like, okay. In the same way TikTok is, like, exposing this person who cheated on me.
Right, but it's on the scale of badness, definitely below.
And it, I think it thinks it's doing the opposite of what Is Anyone I was doing.
Got like, it.
It's attacking the perpetrators. It thinks it's doing this, right? Anyway. He's a funny guy. So the open letter starts with, "Hello, Hunter, ... It's been nearly 10 years since I took over and shut down your despicable revenge porn website. Sometimes you need to be a bully to beat a bully. And I'm the first to admit that I intellectually bullied the ever-loving shit out of you. Your main stated objective was to ruin young girls' lives. Even after they indicated that they were going to commit suicide if their unauthorized naked images weren't removed from your website, you laughed in their faces. Are you still laughing now? You tried to destroy their lives, but instead, I intellectually destroyed yours. You received a masterclass in the fine art of social engineering." He's silly. I just think it's funny.
Feels like this guy would probably be super fucking annoying to know in real life, but I appreciate that he did this.
But I'm like, thanks for buying the site, King, I guess.
It feels like it's out of his own sense of like, I'm a vigilante justice.
He's Batman. A bit of a white knight.
Yeah, for the girls, but...
But he is doing but everyone he did, a favor.
Yeah, what needed to be done.
Hunter's reasoning for selling the site is that he was concerned about child porn being on it. It's very likely another reason, which we will get to. Again, Is Anyone Up cannot be penalized because it's protected by the Communications Decency Act. And if Hunter and the site weren't obtaining the photos, only housing them, then they were protected. But there's this woman named Charlotte Laws who goes on a media tour against Hunter, and she claims that the photos of her daughter Kayla that were posted on the site were never actually sent to a lover or a partner, which means they couldn't have been submitted. They were like these artsy nudes that Kayla had taken and uploaded into her Gmail storage. Hunter's fans are really fucking mean about this. Like, someone said, the fact that @CharlotteLaws actually thinks her daughter took a nude photo just to send to herself, but basically they're like, your daughter's a whore and you're in denial about it. And she and Kayla are, like, dragged across the internet. but they're very important characters in the story. As you know, I think a lot of the culture around revenge porn, especially back then, was about victim blaming and, like, deterring women from sending nudes in the first place. Like, I read this whole McAfee article that has this, like, list of ways to avoid getting revenge porned, and it all lies, like, basically on the victim not doing it at all. And in his Anderson interview, Hunter said this. Anderson goes, "You know what you're doing is sleazy, right?" And Hunter says, "I don't feel it's sleazy. The people that they're trusting are the ones submitting, so why isn't the blame on them?" And then Anderson's like, "But you're profiting off of it." A bunch of comments under the video of it on YouTube are kind of crazy, like the ones from the time, because there are newer comments that are against Hunter, but the old ones are crazy. I'll just read you a couple.
Okay.
One is like, "These women trusted the wrong people. Their photo could have been up anywhere on the internet. Hunter just created the accumulator." And, like, "As adults, these women should be fully aware of the consequences of sending nude pics to people. They are refusing to accept responsibility and shifting the blame to this guy. And I'm totally with Hunter on this. It's not wrong. It's the woman's stupidity." And, like, even the conversation around Katie Laws, you know, makes this distinction between right and wrong. Like, oh, it's not so bad if you just took the photo for yourself and uploaded it. It's really whorish if you took the photo and sent it to someone else for their pleasure.
Someone you trusted.
Someone you trust, like, your fault for trusting them, I guess.
Yeah.
What kind of questions does this raise for you about why nudes are leaked in the first place? Like, well, I just feel like it says a lot, you know?
I think it's so funny for him to try and, like, take the blame off of himself because he's not the one originally leaking it, when it's like, you are creating an incentive for these guys. You're creating a culture around, like, oh, if this bitch does, like, wrongs me, or if I'm mad, I can put this on here and it's gonna feel awesome. I know that there's a place where I can embarrass her and there will be a huge audience.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, also, if they know about the site, they're probably on the site looking at it. Like, it's creating a culture where that's encouraged and they have a safe space to do that. But as far as, like, why nudes are leaked, I think because people get a gratification about shaming women specifically for being sexually promiscuous, quote unquote. I mean, like, sending a boyfriend or even someone you're just dating a nude is not promiscuous, but it's like an ultimate kind of, like, vulnerability of looking at, like, a naked person and then pointing to them and throwing tomatoes at them or whatever. Like, yeah, I think it's just, like, we think it's the most embarrassing thing in the world, and so it is.
Totally. I think it's, like, very much reinforced by our cultural values about a woman's body being tarnished once it's made public. I think that is really reinforced by this, the humiliation of it and, like, materially destroying them.
Well, then it's like, it's like how Pamela Anderson can pose fully naked in Playboy and be like, that was a good experience for me. But, like, having yourself naked on film without your consent, like, without your control, like, that strips away your agency. And then it's just a completely different thing.
Well, it just goes back to the conversation of, like, oh, you did something sexual, so you give up all your rights in doing that. Like, I just think a lot of it comes back to this idea of, like, entitlement. If you're going to have that body and you're going to show it sometimes, then, like, I have the right to see it. Everyone else has the right to see it. And I even have the right to profit off of it.
Yeah.
Because you chose to do this in the first place. You set the foundations for it.
Yeah. Because you wanted to send a nude photo to somebody that you're sleeping with, you should have every employer for the rest of your life see those pictures and have that association with your name. Like, have it available for your fucking kids to see one day because you were a slut.
And then also, like I was saying, the images that were associated often had the person's name or address and, like, social links on it.
I mean, it's all bad, but that's really, like, a cherry on top.
Well, it's doxing.
Yeah.
Do you think most of the interest in posting and viewing these photos, do you think most of it was out of a sexual nature, or do you think a lot of it was coming from another place?
No. I'm sure there are guys that get off on humiliating and threatening women like that, but no, I think it's absolute losers who hate women and want to see them suffer and want to confirm something they think about them, which is that they're sluts or whatever, are getting satisfaction from, like, seeing them degraded in this way. So no, I don't think it's, like, necessarily driven by sex.
Exactly. And to emphasize, like, these are regular women from all around the world, like, or from all over America at least, like, just normal girls. And people, like, it's not just women, like, a lot of other people were posted on the site as well. It's just that the majority were women. Yeah, I just think the most striking thing about, like, the whole doxing part is just that it's this perfect distillation of the idea that revenge porn, you know, it isn't about titillation, it's about doing harm.
It's revenge.
Like, there's this article about revenge porn where the author ends it off by being like, if you're more not so privately progressive than me and you're cool with nude photos being spread on the internet like David after dentist, then by all means, break out the camera in the bedroom. If not, it may be best to commit those nude images to memory rather than a memory stick. But like, I don't know. I just think regardless of whether you personally care if someone sees your body, like the men who profit off of it and like traffic on these sites intend to damage you psychologically no matter what. Like if you tell them you don't care, I don't think that they care. Like they're still going to try and find a way to harm you and humiliate you. Like you may not be humiliated by the photo, but I think that regardless, these men will try to make it a humiliating event.
Yeah, and even if you're not humiliated, there are just like other material consequences that come with having these photos available online. Like it's not just about embarrassment, which I think is also awful on its own. But again, it especially when you link names and socials and like cities, like that puts people in physical danger in real life. If somebody is in their city, it impacts their ability to be employed or their ability to do anything that requires some kind of like internet background check. It's so much more than that.
Yeah, it's so much more than that. And like, obviously, it should start with our society changing that and like not making those things consequential for jobs. Like, everyone has a body.
Of course, but in 2010.
But in 2010, like, of course, that's going to be an issue. I remember the first time I heard about revenge porn was in this episode of 90210, the reboot. Like, Shanae Grimes' character is revenge porned. Like, someone hooks up with her and takes all these photos. And I remember being like, wow, that's my worst nightmare.
Yeah, on Degrassi, it was a plot line probably like 50 billion times.
Yeah, it's like a topic of the week kind of thing. But so 2010s.
It scared me a lot. I remember there's an episode where a girl's like nudes go around the school. And then it is kind of like, well, she's the promiscuous girl doing whatever, but
I think the show was critical of it, though. I don't think the show was saying that it's her fault.
Yes, I think, oh God, I don't remember. It was a long time ago. I'm old.
So in 2012, this New York-based DJ named Tanner is scrolling on Facebook when he gets a message from a girl that he barely knows in his friends list. Let's call her Kristen. Kristen is like, in the chat, she goes, "Hey, can I have your phone number?" with like a bunch of question marks. And he's kind of flattered because she's kind of cute, but he's also a little bit weirded out. So he sends it and is like, why? And then she says to him that she needs to reset her Gmail, but she lost her phone, so she can't authenticate it. And she's like, okay, I just put your number in. Let me know if you get a verification code. And he's like, that seems mad fishy. He's from New York. He's like, he actually says this.
Wait, do a New Yorker accent.
No. He's like, why out of everyone you know way better than me would you ask me to do this? And she immediately quells his fears and goes, I don't know, you were on my top chat and I thought you were cute, lol. So he's flattered and he sends her the code and immediately he's locked out of his Gmail. A bit later, the real Kristen, who is 19 years old, comes home from soccer to find out that she's been locked out of all her accounts. Not only that, but over the next few days, she gets a bunch of weird phone calls from strangers and hundreds of Facebook friend requests because it turns out nude self-portraits she had taken and uploaded to her Gmail storage were on Is Anyone Up? So Kayla's story may have actually been true. She and Kristen and like countless other people had been posted on the site without ever actually sending their nudes to someone. Many of their Gmail accounts had been taken over by an address called GaryJones815@gmail.com. When another victim, let's just call her Tanya, wrote to this like so-called Jones person about her distress, the email sent her a response back. And the email said, I just got my third DUI and I lost my job last week. I'm 6 days sober, but I get it. That was my choice as opposed to you, who did nothing wrong. If it's any comfort, you're absolutely beautiful and that gives you a leg up on almost every woman on the site. So what the fuck is going on here? It turns out Hunter had hired some hackers to break into people's Gmail accounts.
Oh my God.
Through a simple trick at the time where as long as you have access to someone's phone number and you can get the verification code from it, you're into the account. And remember how I said that you could be protected if you were housing the images only? Well, in this case, Hunter was undergoing illegal activity to obtain them so he could be convicted.
Dumb fucking idiot.
Yes. So Charlotte and Kayla Laws launch an FBI investigation, which found out that a ton of the photos on Is Anyone Up were actually hacked from Gmail. Hunter was caught and charged with 15 counts of conspiracy, unauthorized access to a protected computer to obtain information, and aggravated identity theft. He pled guilty and he went to prison and he was released in 2017. Now he lives in Colombia and he makes electronic dance music because he's the fucking worst.
Oh, God.
I think there's been a lot of work done to establish the distribution of revenge porn as a violent crime.
Mm-hmm.
In that paper that I had mentioned earlier called Revenge Porn in the Shadow of the First Amendment, they talk about how, as opposed to like back in the day where it was impossible to be penalized for revenge porn, or it was very hard to for the specific instance of doing that, almost every state in the US by the time of 2022 had adopted specific laws to combat it. But in the paper, they talk about how the laws differ from state to state and they have different consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they all kind of take different approaches. Some categorize it as an infringement of privacy. Some see it as an obscenity offense. Some place it under harassment offenses. And the big thing in the article is that the writers argue that revenge porn should be criminalized instead as a sex offense. Because as we were saying earlier, it has the same impacts of a sexual offense.
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously will have harsher punishments for the perpetrator. And I kind of wanted to ask, because we've talked about this on the pod a bit, what do you think of that?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because in the issue with penalizing sex offenses is that they're hard to prove, but revenge porn seems like a much easier offense.
It's got a paper trail.
Yeah, to prove. I think it just depends. Like, do I think that it should be penalized in the way that, like, an act of physical violence is? No, because I think that the kind of thinking behind incarcerating people who commit physical acts of violence is that they are a threat to the public.
It's a question of, like, what threat means, I guess.
But I think, like, if you think about a white-collar criminal who is a threat to the public, if they're, like, frauding elderly people, right, they're not being treated like a violent offender. So I think it is kind of – it would probably need its own kind of classification through that. But, like, I do – think that it's a sex offense to leak nudes. Like, I do think in a world where our lives are just becoming more and more online and what is available of us online really does have an impact on our lives outside of the internet, that having leaked nude photographs of yourself without your consent available, it has a material effect on your life. And I think that it can cause the same kind of, like, feelings of violation.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it would probably need to be its own offense under, like, an umbrella of sex offenses, which might warrant a different kind of, like, punitive thing. But I don't know. I don't think it's that crazy to classify it as a sex offense.
Yeah, I think classifying it as a sex offense, like, I think it kind of goes into that idea, I guess, of, like, if the internet's mimicking real life, then real life should mimic the internet. Like, if internet is going to supplant real life and, like, act like it's real life and basically become our real lives, then real life has to take the internet seriously in the same way it would take stuff seriously that happens in real life. I just think it's, like, constant, like, push and pull in movements against sexual violence where, you know, there's this history of having acts that fall under this umbrella of sexual violence, you know, not being taken seriously by the law. But then at the same time, it kind of makes you question, like, what justice is. For example, I was just recently watching Promising Young Woman for the first time when I was researching for a video I'm doing. And, you know, even though the movie's slated as a rape revenge, the main character at the end gets justice, like, not by vigilante murder, but, like, by calling in law enforcement. And, like, that had a lot of pushback. Because it just kind of makes you think about this very liberal takeover of activism, which sees justice as, like, only being obtainable through the penal system. Like, Hunter definitely, there's no doubt he fucked up the lives of thousands of people, like, especially women. But I am just dubious about whether his actions should be labeled, again, like you're saying, as violent for purely symbolic reasons. Like I do think it's a sex offense, and I think it falls under the umbrella. But again, it just always comes into the conversation with me, too, about how we have trouble placing things on a spectrum. And, like, I just think to say it's violent for the purpose of symbolism is a little bit dangerous. But it is hard because obviously it does have the same impacts as a sexual violation. So it's tough. Like, I think it's just, it's a little bit tough.
It's a little bit tough. I mean, I think that causing harm to somebody in other ways outside of just like physical violence are things that still warrant a kind of response from the law. But I think...
But like a penal response, well, is where I'm questioning.
I think it would be fair to put them at least in a position where their ability to do things on the internet is greatly limited or totally, monitored totally. In some capacity. And also it's like, I think probably with every case, it would depend on certain things and contexts about like the scale of what they're doing. It's always tricky. I mean, like, I don't think America handles anything great as far as punitive systems go. So it's not like I'm like, yeah, boys, take it away. Like,
yeah, I just get concerned when feminist movements get caught up in yeah. a particularly judicial,
well, yeah,
like retributive justice, basically. Like, I do think these men should be punished. Do I think they should be punished via penal system? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and also it's like, I wonder, a big thing with like sexting laws, which I don't know what they're still like now, but it was the case that you... Like, if you were an underage person, like, sending a nude to another underage person, I think you both could be
yeah.
in trouble for child pornography.
That's what's happening in the States right now.
Yeah. yeah. So, I think,
like... Slippery slopes.
Misuses, where it's, like... yeah. But I don't know enough about, like, what they want explicitly for these laws or, like, the punishments to know how exactly how
they
I feel
just
about
vary
it.
Greatly.
Right.
But a lot of them can result in prison. Like, I think, again, like you're saying, it's one of the only sex offenses that you can actually... not. It's not labeled as a sex offense, but it's one of the only things that fall under the umbrella of sex offense that you can actually prove easily in court.
But so what are they... Are they trying, like, by making it a sex offense and that makes it a federal crime instead of, like, something that's ruled on a state level?
That's the goal of these people arguing that it should be a sex right. offense, is to make it a harsher punishment. I agree with the cultural... like, the cultural acceptance of it as a sex offense. I think it should be labeled as a sex offense. But do I think it should be labeled as a sex offense for the sake of making harsher punishments and more punitive justice? That's where I'm a little bit just on the fence.
Yeah, for sure.
So if ex-girlfriend pictures was already a thing back in 2005, and, you know, revenge porn has been happening basically since the days of Marilyn Monroe, like, it's been around, why is this episode about Is Anyone Up? Well... in a 2011 profile of the site for Forbes, this journalist named Kashmir Hill refers to the photos that ended up on it as revenge porn. Until this point, it had previously been understood as, like you had defined it, an image that circulated without consent, either from a former recipient of that image or someone who had taken it without consent. But now it included iterations of basically beaver hunt, right? Like sites that house the images and sometimes even like hacked people to obtain them. So now we're in this era in the early to mid 2010s where like a whole bunch of things are happening with regards to revenge porn. This guy named Karen Gary Jazarian was arrested for hacking into over 350 women's email accounts, stealing their nudes and using them to extort the women into sending more nudes. And like this, along with a whole bunch of other cases like this were happening around the time, and they brought about the use of new terms like sextortion and cyber sex terrorism, which are now widely used words today. In 2014, something went down that is now referred to as the Fappening, where a whole bunch of celebrity iClouds were hacked into, as well as some non-celebrities, and they were like leaked all over the internet. I'm sure you and the listeners remember this.
Well, I didn't know that it was called the Fappening, but I do remember like I mostly just remember that Jennifer Lawrence had her nudes hacked. I didn't really know who else was was involved in that. But yes, I remember this as a thing.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence is one of them. Ashley Greene, Jill Scott, Kate Upton and her husband Justin Furlander. Victoria Justice was also on there. Jennifer Lawrence, the reason you probably remember her the most was that she was particularly outspoken and very litigious about it. So this guy, George Garofano, and three other men were sentenced to prison for terms ranging from 9 to 12 months. And basically, in this interview she did with Vanity Fair, Jennifer Lawrence said that she thought the website's reposting and disseminating the images should be held responsible. So she's kind of echoing what happened to Is Anyone Up? And she echoed the idea that revenge porn is a sex crime, like this article was saying. And then she said something which is really interesting. She said, "Anybody who looked at those pictures, you're perpetuating a sexual offense. You should cower in shame." And I just wanted to ask what you think about that. Like, what onus do you think there is on people who aren't profiting off of it, but just viewing the image? Like, do you think that it's perpetuating a sexual offense?
I think it's perpetuating the harm of that offense. I think that it is increasing the magnitude at which the image is being seen by people that she did not give explicit consent to see. And so I think in a way, like, are they doing the same thing as the person who hacked it and posted it? No. But the more eyeballs, I think the more material harm that could come with it. It's complicated. Like, I don't think you should be punished the same way for, like, viewing the images. But I also think that it's not impacting how the images impact her.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think, like, I saw them with my friends when I was younger. I would have been, like, a teenager.
I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, and I saw some later, too, in university, like, with people. We weren't, like, pointing and laughing at it or anything like that. It was genuinely out of curiosity. It was like, oh, these images. Like, I don't know. I think there's something morally dubious about looking at them. I do think she's kind of placing some pretty aggressive blame where maybe I don't think it necessarily is deserved. Like, I don't think it's malicious necessarily all the time when people see those photos. And I think she's kind of characterizing everyone who looks at them as malicious. And I don't know if I agree with that. It is contributing to the harm. But I don't know. I just don't know if I necessarily think that it's exactly perpetuating a sexual offense. I do think maybe there is, it's increasing harm because it is increasing viewership of the image. But I don't think if you're not disseminating it, I don't know if I would place the blame directly on people who aren't disseminating it, just seeing it. But then it's like, I guess if people are on, is anyone up? Like, they're going on that site all the time. I do think it's a little gross. So I don't know. I think it's complicated.
Well, I just did an episode, the Pam and Tommy tape, which is about a leaked and stolen tape. And a lot of people, there's a lot of academic writing on it because a lot of people watched it just out of this, like, curiosity. And, like, I think a lot of people, like,
it becomes almost like an event or like a water cooler. It's, yeah, like, even with the news, it was like a water cooler thing. Like, you, yeah, almost want to be involved in chatting about it.
And I don't think any of those people thought that it was, like, morally wrong to be looking at it. Like, it's like, I think it's coming from a place of human curiosity. I think there were people who were also watching it to get off or to poke fun at Pamela Anderson, but I think it's just, like, a complicated thing.
I think it also just raises a question about celebrity, I guess, because, like, if I saw someone's nude who wasn't a celebrity, I would feel a lot more discomfort. And I do think that is something to be critiqued, I guess, about, like, the way that we feel entitled to celebrity bodies. The celebrity's already there, we know who they are, and they're so famous that their image is so ubiquitous, and they're gonna be okay monetarily half the time, so you feel almost less morally wrong by looking at them. Like, there's a weird way of, like, absolving yourself, I guess. Mm-hmm. Maybe that plays into it. I do think, like, even Kayla Laws brought up that when she's, like, a huge activist against revenge porn, and she brought up that, you know, these celebrities got so much attention for it, and, like, the cops took them very seriously. And basically, when Kayla Laws was talking about it, Scarlett Johansson had successfully gone against the person who leaked her nudes before this fappening thing ever happened. And Kayla was like, if I was Scarlett Johansson, the cops would have taken me seriously. But, like, they haven't been taking me seriously historically because I'm just a regular person. So I think there's just, like, an interesting power dynamics at play and, like,
sure,
kind of shifting between celebrity and regular person.
Well, but then I also think that it took perhaps, like, such high profile cases to make, I mean, and people saying things like Jennifer Lawrence, which was what she was saying, a bit, like, hyperbolic perhaps, but maybe it was, like, it left an emotional impact or, like, left people with something to debate or think about,
yeah,
as far as, like, their own actions, and probably just made people consider more about, like, the harms of revenge porn and, like, the depths of it.
Yeah. I think making celebrities the victims increase the cultural stigma around it.
Well, it's like how now they're starting to think about legislating AI porn because Taylor Swift was the victim of it.
And we will be doing an episode on that. Mm-hmm. So moving on, like, there were some innovations that came out of this. So, like, obviously there were legal innovations. The controversy around, like, is anyone up? And then all of these extortion and nude leak cases led to a lot of states criminalizing revenge porn, as we said. But then there was also some tech innovation as well. Apple beefed up a lot of its security systems after that. Like, now you get an email whenever someone accesses your iCloud.
Oh, and that's from the Fappening.
And that's from the Fappening. The same goes for Gmail. You get an email whenever the account is accessed on a different browser. We also now have, like, two-factor authentication on most platforms. I don't know if it's directly from the Fappening or is anyone up, but I'm sure contributed to that.
I think that the early 2010s was, like, a period of shit being leaked on the internet and like that.
Shit was getting leaked. So overall, things have been really tightened up, and it's interesting. I don't know, it's just interesting to think that the iCloud email alert was because of nude leaks. It's like there are two things that provoke innovation: war and sex. We have the computer because of war. We have iCloud email alert because of sex.
Yeah. I mean, well, because really the fine-tuning of the computer was for sex.
Well, yes.
Think about it.
Well, yes.
Well, sometimes.
And that's where we get to today. I would say our culture generally perceives revenge porn pretty negatively. Wouldn't you say so?
I would hope so. Like, I would sincerely hope so. So, yeah.
I think there's a huge stigma around it. Like, yeah. It's very looked down upon. I kind of wonder how much this influenced... I was just thinking about it, and I was like, I wonder if this at all influenced thirst trap culture. Just this idea of, like, women kind of taking agency and showing their bodies. Like, you know, Caroline Calloway leaked her own nudes on Twitter. And it's, like, women kind of getting ahead of the curve, almost. Like, a lot of women will post these kind of, like, semi-nude photos on Instagram, and it's, like, a way of reclaiming it, almost. Like, the body's already out there, so it takes the power away from a leaked image.
Well, Bella Thorne leaked her own nudes because she knew that somebody was going to leak them. Like, someone had basically threatened it, and then she still got shit for it. Like, she was still criticized by people. But, like, if we're thinking about the psychological tolls of revenge porn, then I think a lot of people might find, like, a way to, like, kind of mitigate the harm done to themselves is by at least having some agency in when and how they're distributed, if their distribution is, like, an inevitability.
I think that's definitely the case, which is comforting.
I mean, it's comforting and it's sad because it's, like, just because you've decided that this is probably the best way to go about it doesn't mean that you wanted those images out there in the first place.
Yeah.
And so
it's sad that someone has to feel backed into a corner to have to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think Caroline Calloway did. I think she did it just because. And that's what I'm trying to think of, though. Like, people who aren't even backed into a corner, just women. Like, I wonder if it just influenced a general culture of, like, women feeling more, I don't know how to explain it. Like, women reclaiming and taking control of their bodies, even if it hasn't been done to them in the first place. Like, just doing...
Right.
Just doing it in general, I wonder.
Think about what a big news story it was when Kim Kardashian posted nudes on Instagram, like, back in, like, I don't know, mid-2010s. Like, that was a news story. People, it was a lot of discourse. But I think that probably started a trend of, like, more people doing it, and that sort of desensitized us to these type of, like, self-made images of nude celebrities that, like, maybe it would mean that it would be less of a news story when it happens in the future, which I think is the best possible thing. The less headlines, the less viewers.
Well, it's taking the power away. I've seen Eric Andre's dick on Instagram upwards of 17 times, probably.
And he's doing it for women.
And he's doing it for the girlies. So to end off, Is Anyone Up essentially expanded the definition of revenge porn from, you know, jealous, angry ex-boyfriend revenge to, like, full-on hacking, doxing, sextortion. It eventually led to the Fappening, which led to major advancements in privacy. It led to major advancements in anti-revenge porn legislation. And, like, overall, I think just a general cultural stigma around sharing someone's nudes. So I just think it's kind of a fascinating story. Hunter Moore is a prick. A lot of this information came from an interview he did, like, last year, and that guy still sucks so much. I mean, so much.
And if he didn't still suck, I'd be very confused.
I mean, they say prison's supposed to change you. I guess rehabilitation doesn't work.
Yeah.
So to end off, send nudes.
Don't share them.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.